Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. Checking in right now with Scott Appleby, who's the director of the Office of Emergency Management and Homeland Security. And Scott, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hi, Melissa. How's everyone doing?
Everyone's doing pretty good. Thank you so much for asking. I mean, I think a lot of people are super focused on the COVID vaccine appointments and everything, especially since they've now upped it to the 65 and over category, which is great.
Correct.
I did have a question for you, though, Scott, and I wasn't sure if you could kind of give us a little bit of insight. After hearing about Lisa Morrissey leaving as the health director, now up in New Milford because it's closer to her home, correct me if I'm wrong, we don't have a health director in Bridgeport at this point.
No, right now we have an acting deputy director of public health. We have initiated reviews for a health consultant, and those have been concluded, or they're continuing, I think, just this week, and then they're going to start reviewing all the applications and the individuals who they interviewed. I do know that as far as the health director's position, the city obviously is making a concert effort to really, you know, focus in on someone who understands the dynamics of the city, understands what we're looking for, and is really able to hit the ground running. You know, that, you know, they're familiar with everything going on, and they have a really, you know, extensive background expertise in municipal public health. Mm-hmm. And again, all the challenges that we face as a city, you know, as the largest city in the state of Connecticut.
Right. And I mean, I'm glad that you brought that up, because a couple of things, and you know, whatever you can answer is super appreciated. A few things that I've noticed the governor bring up in the last couple of weeks in his press conferences. Just this week, he brought up the fact that with the COVID vaccine rollout, it's been much easier for the state to do that and work directly with town and cities if they are working with a health director. Do you believe, because we now don't have someone in that role during the rollout of the vaccine, do you think it is creating a real problem for Bridgeport? Do you think it's not as big of a deal? You know, where's your stance on where we're at with the COVID vaccine? Like, if we had a health director right now, do you think we'd have more shots in people's arms?
I don't believe so. I think we're actually one of three individuals, myself, CEO Hawkins, and Tammy Papa, acting director, who are are lockstep with the state of Connecticut on a daily basis. I mean, we have daily calls with the commissioners of public health, the you know, folks from OPM, the folks from the governor's office, to ensure we're following not only our city's COVID vaccination plan, which we submitted, you know, to the state, mm-hmm. But also ensuring that we're getting the doses into the arms of our citizens. I mean, I think there's been many nationwide challenges with the way the rollout has occurred. I think in many states you see a lot of challenges, especially with larger cities, larger communities. Mm-hmm. I think the state and us working together and our solutions and strategies are definitely a concerted effort. And again, we have a really good battle rhythm going now with our mass vaccination clinic. We're starting to roll out a mobile vaccination process where we can actually go to those that are homebound. We're actually doing one today to a 97-year-old resident. So I think the strategies that we implemented and working in close, like I said, lock and step with the State Department of Public Health and the state officials, all of our, Emergency Operations Center, as you know, we have our ESF 8 group, which is our health and medical folks, both hospitals, federally qualified health centers, AMR. Those are members of our team. So we meet weekly with those teams and daily with the state.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Scott Appleby this morning with the city of Bridgeport. And Scott, you know, I also noticed, I think it was something that the mayor had tweeted this week. He was kind of putting out their COVID vaccination facts. I know I've read some headlines that some of the minority communities in Bridgeport are just not ready to say we want to get the COVID vaccine. You know, there's still a lot of concerns. There's a lot of doubts. There are a lot of questions. What's in the vaccine? Which, you know, is not, it's not like it's only in Bridgeport. That's everywhere. everywhere. But it was interesting. You know, I saw the mayor had posted these COVID vax fact sheets. And like, for example, like some of the facts he put out there, like the Moderna Pfizer vaccine doesn't contain live or dead cells of the virus or any material that can damage your DNA. To me, like, I think to me, that's a very educational, like these are very education-based facts that we're putting out there for people. Are you guys efforting to put more education out there in order to make sure people understand it better and aren't trusting like rumors on social media and things like that?
Absolutely. I think if a resident of Bridgeport goes to www.getvaxbpt.com, so that's getvaxbpt.com, there's a lot of information in regards to the vaccination, a lot of information on where you can find vaccination, you know, where to call us to get in touch with our hotline we set up with our senior center. And then, again, it also focuses in on the Department of Public Health, local Department of Public Health, and the fact sheets on COVID itself. So we have a lot of information. We have a lot of campaign. We're working closely with our city council members to reach out. And you know, I can only speak, you know, there's nationwide, everybody is hesitant about a shot, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm one of them. I was hesitant in the beginning. You know, I have a mother who you know, suffers from an illness that, you know, the last thing I want to do is bring COVID home to her when I'm visiting. So that really, you know, from that perspective, from my, you know, my kids, it really, I'm out in the public. I mean, as an emergency management director, we're everywhere.
Right.
So, you know, it's a protection of them as much as it's a protection of me. And I think, you know, once you get educated and you learn a little bit more about it, my shot, you know, when I took it the first time, didn't hurt. I had no side effects. I heard a lot of people having side effects. And unfortunately, you know, that's part of your immune system triggering and starting to really, you know, impact and take hold to start protecting you. So there's a lot of information out there. And again, I mean, you know, the one thing we recommend to everyone is, you know, you're going to make your own decision, but get informed before you really make that true decision. Don't just, I, you know, the examples you hear is you're going to be 20 years from now, there's going to be a lawsuit and you're going to be part of it, right? And you can see those commercials.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, and that's the fear. We understand that. But get educated. It's there. Getvaxbpt.com. You can go to our city's website, Department of Public Health, and there's a lot of information to really get you informed. And then we're going to be out in the community with a lot of community outreach teams to really, you know, sit down and really converse with somebody who has some questions in regard to the vaccine.
That's so great. Scott Appleby, the Director of the Office of Emergency Management and Homeland Security, thank you so much for coming on this morning. I really appreciate it.
Anytime, Melissa. Take care.
All right, you too. And right now, we're going to go into Westport, see what's going on there. Our first selectman, Jim Marpy, is on the line right now. And Jim, thanks for coming back on the show. How are you?
I'm great, Melissa. Good morning to you, and how are you?
Thank you. I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for asking. I appreciate it. So I actually was thinking about, and it's amazing that you had brought this up yesterday. So because of the recent storm, one of the beaches in your area shut down for like clearing and stuff. And I was thinking ahead. I was thinking, you know, at some point we'll be back on beaches and we'll be out of the out of the snow. So I was glad you kind of brought this up, kind of looking ahead to spring events and how COVID is going to play a part. Can you give us any kind of insight? Westport is probably one of the more popular places, especially during the spring and summer, for people to spend their time. Campo Beach, you guys have so many places down there. What can you tell us at this point when it comes to Memorial Day, beach access, anything like that, that you could sort of hint us in the right direction?
Well, in spite of all that snow and how cold it was this morning outside, we have begun thinking about the outdoor activities, and that particularly falls in the arena of Parks and Recreation. But and just thinking about it, and assuming that we stay on the track that we're on with the people getting vaccinations, with the positivity rate continuing to get lower, I think the likelihood is we would open the beach and the beach parking really is the gating, somewhat the gating factor there, at kind of the level where we closed it last fall, and then we'll see how it goes and how we all collectively feel as a society about the ability to congregate and so forth. Memorial Day, we've approved the parade, the usual parade route, in the hope that we might be able to run the parade, but we've made some alternative plans, or we're thinking about some alternatives. If we can't conduct the parade in the usual way, marching up Post Road and then up Myrtle Avenue to Veterans Green, we know people like to do the floats, and certainly people like to gather in memory of those who've served and fought for our country and maybe no longer with us. So we'll try to do something more with that, maybe the parade, but at least some form of assembly that works. We're talking with the Levitt Pavilion, the Remarkable Theater, which was one of these great, amazing stories that grew out of last summer's COVID, an outdoor theater that you stay in your car and cars are socially distanced and everything, and that worked very well in the Imperial parking lot. So we expect to have a lot of the things that COVID produced last year as ways of entertainment and some of the more traditional ways, but trying to make sure that all the social distancing and COVID prevention rules are observed. Mm-hmm. So work in progress, but I did want to assure your listeners that we're thinking about this stuff already, and we know that all of a sudden it'll be the middle of March. We'll have one of those 60, 70 degree days, and everybody will be ready to go doing whatever it is they do in the summertime.
Yeah, it's very true. And also, side note, love Levitt the Pavilion. I had been going there. My grandparents, who have both since passed a few years back, they used to take us every Wednesday night. It was like a tradition. I mean,
that was kids' night. Yeah,
oh my gosh, we love the Levitt Pavilion. So mm-hmm. I love that has survived. So
yeah, they were dark last summer just because there were no touring acts, as you can well know, and trying to figure out how to make use of the space, but. I know they're very focused on that now, and everyone's excited by that possibility. Everyone's excited about the return of the drive-in theater downtown, and some of the concerts that went with that as well. So all creative, and that's what's been to me one of the bright spots of the last year, is to just see the creativity that's emerged by our not-for-profits, our houses of worship, stores, restaurants. How do we survive and thrive and entertain people even in the midst of all that?
Yeah.
Outdoor dining is another one of those things that just today there's a few of our restaurants are tented in a way that this works, but of course. Looking forward to a return to the outdoor dining activities we had last year, and maybe done even better. So all that to look forward to as we look out the window with snow and the expected snow tomorrow.
Yeah, it's very true. Talking to First Electman Jim Marpy here on WICC 600. And something I had a question about, Jim, actually, which I was glad that you were coming on to talk about, beaches, just really quickly to go back to that before I let you go. Yesterday was in my newscast, actually, that one of the New Haven reps was pushing to drop the fines against people who come from out of state to use our beaches. And I wasn't sure sort of your thoughts on it. As we get closer to the spring, is that, what are kind of your thoughts on really keeping it to just Connecticut residents on your beaches? Do you care if people come over from Long Island or New York? Like, what are sort of your thoughts on it?
Well, first of all, our beaches have always been open to everyone. There's no limitation on access. I know some of the other towns make it that you need to have a pass to get on the beach physically. So that's never been the case in Westport. The beaches are open to everyone. We worked very hard last summer to be sure that there was effective social distancing on the beach, and by and large, people observe that and wore the masks. Our challenge is parking, and the number of spaces available, and recognizing that the Westport residents, through their taxes, subsidize the operation of the beach. As I understand the plan that that the state representative was proposing, it was we would only be able to charge what the state charges, and if you have Connecticut plates, that's nothing in the sense of going to the beach, at least at Sherwood Island State Park. But the state collects money when you renew your driver's license, so it does. It costs a lot of money to run our Compo Beach. Compo Beach isn't just a beach. There are a lot of amenities there that that take effort to run. And frankly, the reason for the beach emblems for parking cars is to make sure that Westport residents have the opportunity to come down and park and have spaces available to them as well. So this is an important the parking fees play an important role in our ability to fund the activities that take place not only at the beach but throughout the parks and recreation system.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. Well, Westport First Selectman Jim Marpy, thank you so much for coming on and giving us just a little bit of hope as spring is around the corner. We just can't see it right now, but it'll be here before you know it.
I'm sure it will. In the meantime, have a happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you. You have a wonderful day yourself. And we're checking in now to Milford, where Mayor Ben Blake is standing by. If I could speak correctly, good morning, Mayor Blake. How are you? I just get really excited to chat with you, so sorry about that. Mayor Ben Blake in Milford. Good morning.
Top of the morning.
So, as you know, Mayor Blake, I live in Milford, and I was driving downtown, actually, the other day, and maybe I just drove and I wasn't paying attention well enough, but did Static Era Records close down, the new record store?
You know, I'm not sure. Again, these pandemic times are tough. There are a lot of shifts in hours for a lot of companies trying to adjust, trying to make sure that they can keep up with the new, pandemic-related needs of the city. So there's been some adjustments in some of the local businesses' hours. That's one that I'm not sure if they've even fully opened up yet.
Oh, okay. I don't know why, but I maybe I just read it wrong. I could have. I know that the storefront that was there was like a little kid's store because we used to shop there for my son. But
yeah, Duck Duck Goose, great place.
I miss them. I miss them so much. But yeah, I don't know why, and I could be totally wrong. So if this is fake news, I apologize. But I could have sworn it did not say that the record store was still there. Like, it was something else. And I thought, you're kidding, because it just opened up in October, and I felt awful. And I just wasn't sure. I thought, this kind of launches me into the conversation of, like, sort of just a check-in. You know, we're almost a year into this pandemic, and I wasn't sure how Milford's been sort of holding up on the business front.
Well, nationwide, 2020 was recognized really as a disaster for a lot of businesses and individuals. 2020, really ruined a lot of folks or brought them to near ruin. That said, even in these pandemic times, the Milford business community on whole continues to thrive. Last year, we had 467 new businesses make Milford home, more new business starts than ever before.
Wow, really?
So we've had a lot of recent success. But again, there have been a lot of individuals in our town and everywhere else, and a lot of businesses in our town and everywhere else that are really in a tight spot, that are just hanging on. And everybody is hopeful for a good spring season 2021 and an even better summer season.
So wait, correct me if I'm wrong, Mayor Blake. Maybe I misheard you, what you just said. So hundreds of businesses did actually open in Milford this year, and it's one of the highest we've had on record?
The highest new business starts ever in Milford.
So, really?
That is the good news. 467 new businesses made their home in 2020. Again, it was a slow start because there were really no new businesses opening up in March and April and even into May. But the rest of the year, and perhaps it's because people who have lost their jobs because of the pandemic. Maybe it's because they started new businesses to try something new in their occupation trajectory. But we did have a record number of new businesses come to Milford.
Talking to Mayor Ben Blake this morning, we're talking about Milford. I think that's astounding. And I'm wondering, you know, what do you think kind of makes Milford different? Like, what do you think attracts businesses and people to want to do business in Milford? Milford has grown tremendously. I just know from living in Connecticut my whole life. And I mean, even from when I used to go to school in Milford 15 years ago, it's like totally different. So what would you say sort of sets Milford apart that so many businesses want to be there?
I always say that if you're lucky enough to live or do business in Milford, you're lucky enough. But we do have a lot of things in our favor. For the past five consecutive years, taxes have continued to go down, five consecutive tax cuts. We have the largest grand list in New Haven County that our tax base continues to swell as we have new businesses coming into town, and a host of other things that really make Milford attractive. Really, the stability of our town is a beacon for new businesses coming in.
That's incredible. So if people, you know, like right now, would you say, Mayor, that there are any gaps or places that you are still looking to fill fronts? Like, you know, are there places that people should be looking if they are on the fence about whether or not to take up real estate to be able to open a business in Milford? Like, do you guys have availability, or because you've seen such ironic success in this last year, is it sort of harder now to be able to get like a storefront in Milford?
No, there are still open spaces. There may be less than in some other communities, but there are still places that if people want to relocate their business, we are welcoming them with open arms. We have a great economic development team locally, a lot of great businesses, and a great chamber to help bring in new businesses and make them comfortable once they get here to Milford.
All right. Well, Mayor Ben Blake, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of an outlook on the business front of things in Milford. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
Stay healthy.
All right. Thanks, you too.
It's time to go beyond the classroom and check in with the Discovery Museum. It's science you may not know on WICC 600.
Hey, good morning, David. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing well, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. I've got my mind on the golf course today, although like the space version, I guess. What happened today 50 years ago, or this week, I should say?
Yeah, well, this week, we're marking sort of the end of the Apollo 14 moon mission. You know, the splashdown was a couple days ago, 50 years ago. But what was really cool about this mission, apart from, bringing back almost 90 pounds of moon rocks, was what one of the astronauts actually brought up with him.
That's so cool.
And he actually was able to play golf on the moon.
Alan Shepard, you're talking about, right?
That is correct. Yeah, that's right. Alan Shepard. That's right. So Alan Shepard was an avid golf player, and the story is that that he actually was able to kind of like a jury rig this golf club. He used a sample collection handle, a telescoping sample collection handle. It was really designed to get soil samples. And at the end of it, he actually brought a Wilson 6-iron, just kind of shaved off the club head, and was able to jury-rig it so that when he pulled a string, the whole club would assemble itself on the moon. And then he brought two golf balls with him, and he hid all these things. He put the golf head and the two golf balls in his sock because NASA didn't make a bag for this.
Right, sure, why not? Yeah.
Yeah, there would have been appropriations. You would have had to have a budget involved in the making of a, and they would have called it something like, the collection system.
He's like, I'll just smuggle a couple balls in my socks. Fine.
Yeah, yeah. Now the thing is that people thought that he actually smuggled this, and the astronauts knew that they really couldn't smuggle stuff around. Somebody got in trouble. John Young actually got in trouble because he smuggled a corned beef sandwich.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the astronauts learned that lesson because there was actually a congressional hearings involved in why are astronauts bringing corned beef sandwiches.
That's hysterical.
But anyway, so he brings this contraption to the moon, and he's got his two golf balls, and he just puts them on the sand on the biggest sand trap that he could find,
right.
The moon itself. and he takes a couple swings, and it doesn't go very far. He doesn't, because he's in a spacesuit.
Right.
And he has to do this one-handed, because he can't bring his both hands
around. Both hands in front of him, right. Sure,
can't
sure.
Yeah, you can't do that little stance, everything.
Right.
And he's got a helmet, so he can only really see like what's down, and so his after a little bit of practice, he finally does that first swing, and sends the first golf ball sailing, and Edgar Mitchell's able to find the ball. Oh, here it is, right here. It's probably a few yards he thinks away, but nobody really knows because it's really hard to kind of gauge how far that first ball went.
Right, right.
But the second ball was the one that was really cool because he actually is able to hit that second ball on his first swing.
Wow.
And they can't find it. And so the story is that when Alan Shepard comes back and they ask him how far he thinks that second ball went, oh, of course, it must have gone miles. I saw it go miles and miles away. And so for 50 years, nobody really knew how far these golf balls went. And this was like a big thing.
Right.
So when he comes back, he gives the golf club to the U.S. Golf Association Museum in New Jersey, where they still have this thing.
Uh-huh.
So it's in their collection.
So
it's
cool.
Very rare that they bring this thing out. But it was only just recently, after 50 years, that an image specialist, Andy Saunders, was able to find one of the pictures taken by the Apollo 14 astronauts,
mm-hmm,
that showed where the two balls actually landed. And so he was able to bring out this image-enhancing software to really pull out the details and finally found where the two golf balls were.
Okay.
And based on a little geometry and using an orbiting lunar satellite that actually took a picture of the actual landing site, you know, the hardware that's still left on the moon 50
right.
years later, they were able to figure out how far those golf balls went. So are you ready?
Yeah, I'm like really nervous, actually. I'm on the edge of my right. seat. So how far did
so
it
here
go?
Here we go. So the first golf ball, 24 yards.
Well, he knew it didn't go very far. So
he knew it, yeah. And Edgar Mitchell was able to kind of say, oh, here it is right here. So
right.
they kind of had an idea. But the second one that had alluded, there, and if you look at the all over the web before this time, there were like 300 yards. Some people thought 500 yards. There was like all people. There was actually an actual mathematical analysis that kind of tried to estimate where this thing went. But finally, we know.
And?
40 yards.
Wait, 40 yards? Really?
That's it.
Wait, so did they ever find the ball?
So they didn't actually – the astronauts never found the second ball.
That's hysterical. Okay.
But it was found in this image that was taken by the astronauts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really hard to see, but with all of this new image-enhancing technology, Andy Saunders was able to pick out where the second ball was. And then based on the position of the second ball in the image and the stuff that was kind of around it, he was able to get an estimate that, yeah, it was probably about 40 yards away.
But, like, is there better credit than 40 yards? Like, I feel like, you know, this guy really, you know, had a lot stacked against him. He had the gravity and all that. Like, does that make a difference when you play golf on the moon versus – I have to imagine.
Yeah, yeah. So there's one-sixth of the gravity that you would find on Earth.
Okay.
And so because there's less gravity, you could lob this golf ball much farther. And it turns out if for example, let's just say it wasn't Alan Shepard. Mm-hmm. Let's just say it was Tiger Woods.
Yeah, let's say Tiger Woods. Yeah, let's do that.
Tiger
okay.
Woods. Okay. Okay. So average club head velocity, we're probably looking at well over 100 miles an hour.
So okay.
These professional golfers can really swing that golf club.
Right.
And if we have that kind of a velocity, and if we guess, you know, that they actually are able to shoot this ball exactly at 45 degrees, which is – that's the critical degree that you need.
Right. It's perfect.
For you to shoot it the farthest, to actually lob it the farthest. A professional golfer could probably, on the moon, lob a golf ball probably 2.5 miles.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
so it could be a thing, you know.
Maybe Tiger Woods should get on one of those SpaceX flights really soon, and we should test that theory.
Yeah, exactly.
Just send
them
on up there and see if we could test that theory. That is so cool, David. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Oh, my gosh. Now I just want to go play golf, and I don't even play golf. So there you go. Thanks,
we
David.
Mini golf. There we
yeah,
go.
Yeah, there like you go. Golf. Let's play some mini golf. I'm down with that. All right. Thanks, David. I appreciate it, although the snow will probably make me struggle with finding a white golf ball in the white snow. That might be a little
Well, you know, that's just part of the challenge.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Thanks, David. We'll talk next week.
Take care.